Welcome to the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society of Canada's podcast on chronic lymphocytic leukemia. This podcast is part of a series to inform people affected by blood cancer. My name is Connor Dalton, and I am the Senior Community and Fund Development Coordinator for the Atlantic Region. I work closely with our community engagement team, and our goal is to connect people affected by blood cancer to resources that inform, support, educate, and empower. Today, I am speaking with Dr. Gilles Robichaud. Dr. Robichaud is a professor and researcher at the Université de Moncton. Dr. Robichaud and his team are studying how mito-MPs released by platelet cells transfer molecules to leukemia cells, helping the cancer cells to live longer and have an increased resistance to treatment. By examining mito-MPs, they hope to develop new strategic therapeutic approaches and treatments for chronic lymphocytic leukemia, CLL, patients. And Dr. Robichaud's research is funded by the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society of Canada. So we're here to talk about Dr. Robichaud's research and its implications for chronic lymphocytic leukemia, or CLL, which is one of the most common forms of leukemia in adults. So Dr. Robichaud, thank you for being with us here today.
Thank you for having me.
So I'd like to start by asking you, why did you decide to focus on blood cancer, and in particular CLL, for your research focus?
So myself and my team, we've been working on cancer disease and its different modulations and pathology that are driven by genes. We've been working on that for a while, on different types of cancers, such as blood cancers and solid cancers, breast cancer, etc. But more specifically on CLL, what we found is today we still don't have a cure for these types of diseases. And most people will have that disease for the long term. Often for people that are sick and don't develop more aggressive forms of that disease will actually be on a watch and wait program to see if the disease comes to a point where they need treatment. So we felt invested in supplying more knowledge towards that disease.
And could you explain your research in a nutshell to someone who might have a limited knowledge of cell biology?
What we actually found is the cancer cell itself will always behave all depending on the signals it's receiving by its genetic code. So if you have a hypercell, you have these gene products that are pushing the cancer to grow more and not be killed or eliminated by our normal cell death or negative regulation pathways. So cancer cells are always positive, always growing. So what we've actually found recently is when cancer cells actually use up some of their energy, I mean, they do have to take some pause, because if they invest in building or dividing into other cells, they have to relocate those resources and energy elsewhere, and they actually have to kind of ration those vital resources in an effective way. But what we recently found is all cells of the human body are, nearly all, are capable of releasing these small extracellular vesicles. It's kind of like these little sacks of biological material that actually bud from the surface of that cell, kind of like a virus that's budding from a cell, or an escape pod from a mothership in Starris, let's say. So most of these cells do this naturally. And by having a part of the membrane or the coating of the cell that's budding and shedding, it's actually bringing along some other molecules of that original cell within its packaging, and it's using those little extracellular vesicles as cargo to transport those active molecules to other cells. So mother cells can have those extracellular vesicles budding off them, and those extracellular vesicles can then fuse with neighboring bystander cells. And often there's an exchange of material from different types of cell. Let's say you could have cells from the immune system that are exchanging material with cells from the epithelia or blood vessel cells. So what we discovered is the cancer cells are particularly more susceptible to actually invite and recruit those extracellular vesicles and gain the cargo within those vesicles that derive from other originating cells. And for cancer cells, to receive these contents, it's like having a back door of active and resourceful material for them to keep going on and to divide continuously. It would be basically like your marathon runner, after doing a half marathon, could have a pasta and carb load up and give them more energy. And for the longest time, we were wondering, how does cancer cells actually find these extra resources to keep on growing, etc.? But now we found that these extracellular vesicles that are being traded between cells, which is a normal process, but actually cancer cells are gaining an advantage of accumulating this material for their benefit and the cancer pathology.
And in your opinion, what's the most exciting aspect of your research? And is your research applicable to other blood cancers as well as CLL?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the fact that these extracellular vesicles that trade material between cells is nothing new. A lot of people were showing that proteins can be traded from one cell to others and actually have new functions and behaviors in these cells that receive the new material. But what we found, which is very unique, is the material within these extracellular vesicles help the cancer cells to gain more energy profiles so they can build more building blocks for newer cells to grow and actually increase their energy production in terms of ATP. So they increase their energy, which is basically their limiting factor for a cancer cell to grow faster and be more aggressive and resistant to common anti-cancer therapies. So initially, we were working with the CLL because this is a blood circulating cancer type. Because they circulate in the presence of these multiple microvesicles, so they're always in contact with each other, budding off each other. And our first proof of concept was to show that these cancer cells that are in the presence of these extracellular vesicles will actually accumulate the bioactive material found in that cargo. So we did find that. It was positive, but to our grand surprise now, with other types of blood cancers, let's say, for example, multiple myeloma, which is another type of B lymphocyte cancer, they actually, it's a more differentiated, more mature cell type of cancer, but once they become cancerous, they relocate into the bone marrow, so they're not really in circulation with the blood flow. And initially we thought that if they weren't in contact, they weren't going to be susceptible to their effects or accept this new the new content from other bystander cells, but this is not the case. So by proving that CLL cancer cells actually receive and gain more extracellular material, we also show that other cancers that are not within the blood circulation, such as bone marrow cancers like the multiple myeloma, or even acute lymphoblastic leukemias, which are principally affect kids, that's our next blood cancer that we'd like to target to show that these cancer cells are also susceptible to the same manipulation or the same gain in terms of aggressiveness through the mediation or through the gain of bioenergic molecules.
Could you describe your team that's involved with this project? How many people are involved, their roles, and do you have some collaboration with other blood cancer research projects?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've always been the first one to say that my success is only due to my rich collaborations and all the work from my team members. So actually, as a cancer researcher, my team consists of, we're approximately 10 students in the team, including myself. I have one postdoc, three PhD students, one research assistant, two masters, and three undergrad students. That's around 10, I think, something like that. But not everybody's working on this specific project, which is nice because we have different facets of the types of cancers we were working with and the different pathologies or mechanisms we're trying to elucidate or characterize. But this specific project actually encompasses the role of of my research assistant, one undergrad student, and two PhD students, and we're happy to have just recruited a new postdoctoral fellowship, which arrived this week in the country. He's actually completing his second postdoctoral fellowship, and he has worked with different in vivo and in vitro models, which means working with cells and animals to study cancer, and he's here to exchange his expertise with ours to make this project and achieve our goals. For the collaborators, this is probably the most fruitful part of our work and our project. Myself, as a cancer researcher, I mean, I'm limited by the knowledge I have and the time I can spend on the research. But we have two major co-applicants that play an important and essential part of this project. So we have one important collaborator, which actually works on cell metabolism, on how the cell is capable of generating its energy, saving or building new precursor molecules or building blocks for new cells. And his expertise, he's actually an expert working on the metabolism of insects, more specifically on bees. But you'd be surprised, he is the point person for me to actually assess my cancer cells, to tell me how my cancer cells are producing energy in terms of ATP, how much oxygen they're consuming to produce this energy. And what is particular about cancer cells, they can also produce energy without using oxygen by breaking down and recycling certain molecules. And he's capable of telling me that because the cancer cell wants that energy to drive forward, and he needs those resources to push the cancer forward for growth. So that we have the collaboration of Dr. Nicolas Pichot for that facet of the work. So we have another expert, Dr. Luc Boudreau, which is works in immunology and more specifically in inflammation. And he's an expert of platelets, which have been shown, you know, before and have a grand role in the forming the scabs or to help injury. But most importantly, more recently, platelets have been shown an increasing important role in cancer aggressivity. And what we show through his research is the platelets actually have these buddings of the extracellular vesicles that bring those important components for energy within the cancer cell. So it's actually the only cell type, which is ironically a cell that circulates, has no nucleus, no genomic DNA, but has important components which will actually exchange and give to cancer cells, which cancer cells uses to their advantage to be more aggressive. So those two co-applicants are essential and vital to the success of our project. And obviously, we wouldn't be able to move forward without the recruitment and support of all our donors and patients. So we have numerous clinical oncologists on staff that are playing a huge part in this project.
If this project is as successful as you want it to be, what do you think is next for this research? Does your research have potential clinical applications?
It's really interesting. We've always been involved in the characterization and the elucidation of the mechanisms that allow these cancer cells to behave the way they do. Now, bringing more information and knowledge to that will help us better prepare, you know, future endeavors to either block or inhibit a vital event of the cancer process. But more specifically for our project, if these extracellular vesicles are mostly targeting cancer cells, which fuse with the cancer cells, it would be logical and fairly easy to think that if we would block that engagement and interaction, we could cut off the cancer cells' ability to receive all this resourcing halfway through the marathon of being re-energized to continue their pathology within their host. So it's really interesting. But another surprising facet of our work is as we move forward, we notice that individual people that provide these samples for us to study or use these packaged cargo with the platelets, certain donors have very specific profiles which actually makes the cancer cells not progress. It actually stops the cancer cell in their growth. So there's obviously a lot of things that we don't know, but what we're trying now by studying the current project is we actually discovered the potential of new elements that will inhibit and suppress cancer cell growth.
How is CLL research progressing, and what can we expect in the next, say, 5 years?
Actually, the progression on CLL-specific research has actually had great advances in the past decade. Any new strategy for promise in terms of therapy has actually been applied for this type of cancer. Now, for example, we know the famous and prominent CAR-T strategy, where we actually modulate the recognition ability of your immune system to attack cancer cells. Well, we're limited by that technology, because once we change our immune system to attack specific cells, they can't attack any cells, because that would be auto-destructive for each human being. But what is specific about the CLL cancer is it has the presence of a specific molecule, which is called CD19, which is unique to CLL B lymphocytes. And given that CLL is a hyper concentrated population of these cancer cells, the most abundant type of cell will actually have that CD19 marker, which we can actually tweak your immune cells to look at the CD19 and target that cell to eliminate that cancer cell. And that's been actually used in clinical trials at the moment. And we show that this strategy works very, very well to target the CD19 marker, which is specifically expressed on these types of cancers. Now, somebody could ask, well, what about any other normal or healthy cell that would have that same marker would be susceptible to that destruction? And yes, all depending on how good the targeting is. But what we discovered recently is that CD19 positive cells, once they are depleted, whether they're cancerous or healthy, we don't have a huge physiological relevance or impact or secondary effects of these. The primary impact is we're actually suppressing the quantity and the amount of cancer cells without affecting the general function of the immune system. So that is a very promising part for the therapy against CLL. There's also other strategies, such as immune modulation or immune therapy, where we're actually attacking again using antibodies, which are specific molecules that will recognize other specific molecules. So it would be like a key lock recognition, if you want. So these antibodies are actually used in combination with existing anti-cancer chemotherapies, which are not specific. They kill fast-growing cells, which are the cancer cells. So with using immunotherapy, we can specifically target another receptor, another type of molecule that is only exposed on the surface of these cancer cells, which is called CD20, and we can eliminate specifically those in priority in contrast to all healthy neighboring cells. So moving forward, we're very excited, specifically for the CLL disease, given that no cure to date has been shown. We can control the disease to a certain point, and in most instances, we only treat once the disease gets to a certain point where it has progressed. So right now, we show promising results in the clinical studies, showing that remission are longer and they stay better for longest time. So, and there's less resistance to the therapies that are given to these patients.
Thank you so much, Dr. Robichaud, for taking the time to talk with us about your research and about chronic lymphocytic leukemia today.
Thank you very much.
If you have any questions about CLL or need support to navigate your experience, I encourage you to contact the LLSC at 1-833-222-4884. You can also visit our website at llscanada.org. This podcast was made possible thanks to the support of AbbVie.
Thank you for listening to the Blood Cancer Experience podcast series by the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society of Canada. You can find us wherever you access your favorite podcasts, so be sure to subscribe and leave us a review. If you have an idea for the show, we'd love to hear from you. Send us an email with your comments or suggestions to canadainfo@lls.org. The Leukemia and Lymphoma Society of Canada is dedicated to funding cutting-edge research and supporting people affected by blood cancers. To learn more and access resources including fact sheets, booklets, and webcasts, visit llscanada.org.